Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hey everybody, I'm Rima.
And I'm Paik.
And this is Strange Indeed, a podcast dedicated to the Netflix show Sweet Tooth.
This week we are covering Season 3, Episode 6, titled Here There Be Monsters. Episode 6.
Emotional.
Of 8. We're getting so close.
I know. What did you think about this week's? Did you like this one?
It was... It's complicated.
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I did enjoy it for the most part. Like, it had some really great emotional stuff. It's definitely an episode that put a lot of things together. There's still so many questions that are unanswered that at this point, I don't know if we're ever going to get. It's a lot to try to answer in two episodes, but we'll see. But it's definitely, especially the way this ended, all the pieces are kind of moving to their final places, it looks like. But there was some stuff, and we'll talk about it in this episode, mm-hmm. that just logically I was having trouble with, but feels like they're kind of, you know, fast-tracking some of the things. Like, we got to get these people in this place, and this thing's got to happen. It's like, well, how do we do that? Stars. I don't know. You know. So.
It's a good summation.
Yeah. Yeah, so it felt a little rushed, which, I mean, yeah, it's like, it's the end, but I don't know. I'm not a showrunner or a writer, so I can't pass too much judgment, but, like, I don't know, it feels like he could have spaced out some things a little more so we're not bunching everything up right here at the end so quickly, I'll reserve full judgment until we see how it all plays out in the end. But yeah, I just feel like... this show has been able to take its time so mm-hmm. well, and now it's almost like that Game of Thrones kind of thing. It's like, oh, we're getting to the end, and now everything has to happen all at once. Go, bam, bam, bam. And you're like, right. Hang on. I'm okay with the pacing. That's why I've watched this show for 3 years. Like,
yeah, let's make it make sense, and, you know, mm-hmm. or at least as much as, like, a show based on a comic can anyway, right? Yeah, we know that there's right. some things that, you know, are out of the norm, and that's okay. But yeah, I agree with you. There were a few things that was like, okay, well, that's how we're doing that. And, you know, we're going to fast track that a little bit because we have to. We've only got a couple of episodes left. Maybe they would have done better to have maybe 10.
Yeah.
You know, for this final season.
Which I don't know how they decide that stuff, because I think we've talked about that with other shows in the past as well, where... how do you decide how many episodes a season gets on a streamer like this? Like,
yeah,
could they have taken more episodes? Was it the showrunners? Was it the writers and stuff that said we're doing these episodes, or was it Netflix saying you got this many episodes to wrap it up?
Yeah, figure it out. This is what mm-hmm. this is what you're getting. Yeah, that's true. You know, I don't know anything about that, and like you, I'm not a writer. I'm not a showrunner. I'm just a huge fan of TV mm-hmm. And movies, and I like to nerd out about that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's not like I can say, well, you should have done this better, and here's why. you know, so I don't know what the perfect solution is or anything, but I do wonder if they could have benefited from a couple more episodes. And, yeah, I don't know whose decision that is.
Yeah.
You know, who... if it is, you know, a streamer or whomever, and they're like, this is all you're going to get, this is what you're budgeted for, or, you know, this is all the time that we're allotting you. You know, I'm not sure whose decision that is sometimes, but if they're like, this is the story that we need to tell, and this is how long it takes to tell it, if they give that freedom, or if they're like, you might need a 10 episode, but you're only getting 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a struggle. Yeah. You know?
I'm sure.
So, I'm with you. There were some really great things in this episode, and we're definitely going to talk about them, but yeah, there was a few other things that's kind of like, okay. I'm hoping that if in the next two episodes, and especially like how they decide to wrap it up, if it's a good, satisfying ending, then it makes the other stuff, you know, like I don't think about it too hard. I don't linger on it. I'm able to kind of just like, okay, it's fine because this is what the end result was and I'm satisfied with that. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and kick us off tonight with your first point.
All right. I think the points, I kind of set them up as, usually it was like somebody versus somebody. We don't have a fight card tonight. We have more of just like duos, but I still kind of bunched them into like duos because that was kind of the main storylines that I wanted to start with. First one being, I start small, get bigger. Just a few little notes. Becky and Wendy and their story this episode. We just kind of pick up right where we left off with Wendy saving Becky from Jordan and getting her out of there, and immediately we're picking right back up in this episode of, okay, now we've got to get out of this area, try to reunite with our friends, don't let Zhang's people find us, escape, get to where we need to be. And then, yeah, this is one of those that, it start with a little bit of complaininess where it's like, they felt very rushed this episode. It's like, how do we get them from A to B to Z? And it's like, well, we'll just do it, and you're just going to be along for it. I did have a little note. I like that. Yeah, we see, you know, we got to get out of here before people notice we're gone. And then you see Jordan kind of rubbing his head, walking out, and then getting in a truck. Wendy's like, who's that guy? And I was like, oh, that's Jordan. He's a little bitch. don't worry about him. But no, he's like wakes up from being knocked out because, you know, in movies and shows, as we've learned, a fatal blow to the head from a wrench is just going to knock somebody out. And then they're going to wake up a little bit later like, ow.
Yeah.
Things you see in TV shows and stuff would kill people. But you notice that he doesn't even say anything to anybody about, oh no, the prisoners escaped. Where's Becky? He's just like, not my problem. Don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to get in a truck and go. Like, he's just, not worried about that.
Well, and he came out on his own. No one, it seems like, went and got him. You know, like, did anyone even think of, oh, hey, where's Jordan? You know,
right?
He had
probably not.
Like, if he hadn't woke up, would they have just went ahead and left him? Look like they were.
I feel like they probably would have. Like, they don't.
Yeah.
And that's because Becky still has this kind of like, she feels sorry for him. There's this little bit. She's like, yeah, I thought he was a better person. He's not. But also, she still has that soft spot. She's like, I lied to him. He's been through some stuff, and I think she views him still. She says he's just lost. I don't think he knows what he's going after, what he's following. He's looking for something, and this is where he landed. And as you just said, it's like, I don't think this is even the right place for him. Like, these people don't care about him. I think they would have just left him behind. So you have to feel a little bad for him, but I don't know, because his actions in the last episode, it's like, but he's also not good. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I see where Becky was going. I think she was feeling a lot of responsibility in this episode for being confronted with Jordan again, seeing how he's ended up feeling like the things that she did or said put him on that path, and that if things had been different, would he still be there, you know, and turned out that way, or, you know, or maybe not. And then, of course, you know, the guilt I know that she feels over Bruno. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, which goes into the next part I was going to say, was then when they take that little whatever machine, that little vehicle they were in, just a little two-person tread wheel thing, they stop and they're talking, and then Wendy has that moment where she's, I mean, kind of preaching the things we've been talking about a lot this season, is Becky did what was needed. Like, she doesn't need to hold that guilt and shame on her anymore. Like, what she did was what she needed to do in that moment. But then she says, but I don't blame the wolf boys either. She says, you know, they're also victims in this story. They're just not Becky's victims, but, you know, mm-hmm. Zhang and her family and all of the hell that they've gone through and experienced from their upbringing, raising, in quotations, because that's not a way to raise a child at all. They're raised like hunting dogs and like tools and animals, and it's not
what
children's be. So, you know, and Wendy sees that and says, like, yeah, they have kind of become monsters, but I don't blame them because it's not their fault. It's the world around them, the people that raised them, the people that should have done better.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, I actually had a note about that. I thought you might have a point about that. And what I really liked was, you know, we've talked a lot about Gus this season and prior seasons too, and, you know, showing how much growth he's had as a young man growing up and mm-hmm. everything that's happened to him and how he's matured. And we get that from Wendy too. We know, we can't forget about little Wendy, that she has been through a lot too. She's, you know, seen a lot of things that no kid her age should have to see and been through, and things that they've endured. And she really showed some maturity in this episode by comforting Becky and, you know, telling her, like, it wasn't your fault what happened with the wolf boy, you know, mm-hmm. And that the blame lies with Zhang. And she's 100% right.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to, or I think anyway, if I were in that situation, it would be hard to just like, oh, okay, then yeah, I don't feel so bad anymore. You know, it doesn't, right. doesn't eliminate that guilt. It doesn't just go away. But I think that, you know, it's words of comfort and makes you think about it a different way, that had yeah. those boys not been, like you said, raised in quotes, they weren't raised. I'm not really sure what you call it.
Right.
But basically making them out to be more animals and vicious than, you know, just raising them as children and how they should be. You know, that if they hadn't been raised that way, Becky wouldn't have had to have defended herself in that way.
Yeah.
I think if she had known that Bruno was a hybrid, she would have tried to defend herself in a different way.
Probably, yeah.
You know, I think she still would have defended herself and Wendy, but I think she would have tried to do it in a different way to, you know, mm-hmm. it wouldn't inflict harm in that way. But yeah. again, so, you know, it was self-defense, and, you know, if it hadn't been for Zhang, then none of that would have happened anyway. So it was yeah. really, really interesting to see that maturity from Wendy. She was
absolutely.
She was definitely, you know, showing that maturity mm-hmm. in this episode. She's so darn yeah. cute.
So from the really good stuff that we got with them to ending it on not as high of a note, but yeah, then this moment where they reunite with Sianna and Jep and them, really reunite with Sianna. Now they've never met her before, but reunite with Jep, find their way to Birdie's little outpost there. And again, it's they're just like, where do we go? And it's like, well, Mom always said to follow the stars. And it's like, oh, okay. You still need to know what direction you're supposed to be going in for that to work, but we'll just go with it. I'm just glad Becky and Wendy are back with Jep. I'm not going to, like, complain about it, and it's not going to ruin the whole show for me, but it is something that I'm stopping. I'm like, how does that accomplish anything? We just follow the stars. There's stars everywhere. Got it. Okay. Just North Star? Are we going north? And then we can, you know, situate from there. Oh, just follow the stars, and we'll get where we're going. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, we weren't shown how that works exactly.
No,
just that's what you do, and it's like yeah. okay. I get the North Star kind of thing. Not that I would know anything if I'm out there looking.
Right,
at
I'm not North Star, great with that. But
go. But yeah. you know, still, we don't get to see like the direction or guidance.
Yeah, like it makes sense if there's like we have to get to this location. How do we get there? Well, we know where we are, and we have to get to there. What direction is it in? Okay, it's in, you know, northeast. Okay, well, there's the north. We turn this way. We follow the...
Right.
Sure, sure. But just to be like, we don't know where anybody is. Follow the stars, and we'll get there. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, it was... I'm going to let that go, is what I was telling myself. Mm-hmm. Won't linger on it too far. But it was... Yeah. The end result... them having a little reunion was nice.
Yeah, it's
nice. The surprise on Jep's face, you know, knowing that they were all the way back in, like, Washington, you know, and how the heck did they get there? And, you know, I'm sure there's tons of questions, but, like, it was just so good to see them
Yeah, I did love that reunion. But even they even have Jep be like, "How did you get here?" He's like, "Her mom in the stars." And he's like, "Okay, moving on from that." Then
I'm just happy to see you.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. Yeah,
we'll talk later and catch up much later. Oh gosh. Yep, we just got to get people there. Where they got moving them around on that chessboard.
Yep.
Well, speaking of reunions, I'm going to go ahead and just talk about it because I feel like I'll get too emotional if I go too deep into it. So it's for me, it's kind of short, but one of the biggest reunions that we've been waiting for this entire series was the reunion with Birdie and Gus.
Yes.
So happy that this finally happened.
Yeah, I was emotional before it even happened. Like, literally, the second that Gus walked into the cabin.
Yeah.
I started getting a little emotional because I knew it was coming. I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, and I was a little worried. I thought the same. Oh, he's with the Caribou Man. And we know that Birdie was with the Caribou Man. This is going to happen, right? And then when they got to the cabin and Birdie was, like, nowhere to be seen. I mean, that church doesn't seem to be that big. I mean, I don't know that we saw all of it. But she wasn't in there. And I was like, oh my gosh, did something happen? I didn't think anything bad, but, like, did she leave or did something happen or where is she? That was probably on purpose, you know, to give us a little bit of a moment there and give us that, like, you know, her bursting through the door, you know, kind of moment. But wow, it was so worth the payoff. I know this last season has, in almost all the episodes, have given me one reason or another to just shed so many tears. This episode was no exception. So
yeah,
definitely a lot of tears shed in that moment when we finally get both of them and there's that recognition. You know, Gus only knows her from a picture. Birdie hasn't seen him since he was a baby.
Yeah.
You know, he's been with Pubba, you know, that entire time. So it was so great to finally see them reunited and have a little bit of time to kind of catch up, you know. And I know we'll have more to talk about, you know, their conversations, but I had to go ahead and just bring that up because it was so awesome to finally get that moment that we've been waiting for. And I hope that, I'm so worried about the next two episodes that I hope there isn't something that pulls them apart. I'm like, please don't make this young man search for his mom for, you know, three seasons and then something terrible happen, you know, and that's all the time that they get. You know, I didn't love it when Birdie's like, if anything ever happens to me, please promise that your story won't be like, you know, is it Munak?
Munak.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, please don't let anything like that happen. So anyway, did you have anything that you want to add?
Oh yeah, that would be that's my whole next point is just talking about kind of, again, so that was, like I said, you know, in duos, so Gus and Birdie and that reunion, was beautiful. You know, Gus finally found his mama.
Yes.
And then, bummer, they immediately have to work together to deal with the death of the person that saved both of them. But, you know, there's not a lot of time for rest. No rest for the weary in this show. And then just kind of them catching up. I love Birdie asking the question that I've just been asking in general for years. As Jesus, what's wrong with people? But, yeah, it's a valid response to where Gus is like, you know, because she's like, what happened to him? It was like, oh, he got attacked by wolf boy hybrids that are Zhang's grandkids and that she's trained them to chase me down. And she's like, what the?
Valid reaction. This is,
like, oh, things are bad, bad. Got it. And then the cave where Birdie is shocked at first that he knows about it. There is some weird dialogue stuff in here where she's like, you know about the cave? And he's like, yeah, and I feel like it's calling to me. And then she's like, yeah, I know. And it's like, wait, you just said.
I caught that too. I was like, that was weird.
Yeah.
What?
It's like, so you're shocked or you know, I don't know which one it is. And there's a few of those moments. I didn't write all of them down, but there's a few little dialogue things where somebody would say something and then turn around and be like, oh yeah, and this is like, okay. yeah, so then, you know, clearly it's calling to him and he's got to go find the cave and fulfill some kind of destiny, something. And Birdie seems to be like, yeah, yeah, that's what we should do. And then Munak Sriri. he's like very much like, don't go near it. Don't do it. Something really bad, crazy, major is definitely going to happen there. And I don't know exactly what it is, but I don't, whatever it is, I'm not sure I'm ready for it. It's going to be big. Because there's this very much like he's, you know, don't go. And then they're like, we should. And I think, you know, what his idea really was, which I'll talk more about him specifically later, is, yeah, just he's kind of on the opposite end of Zhang, where it's what we've kind of talked about. He's like, this is the, you know, nature's course. Like, this is the next evolution. Let it happen. Don't try to mess with it any paths. Like, this is what's happened. The, you know, floodgates have been opened. There's no putting, you know, the toothpaste back in the tube. It's just go for it. I've mixed like three different metaphors and analogies in that sense, but you know, it's like you can't put it back. So it means like the people are going to try and then things are just going to be worse. Just let it be. But they have some really great moments in there. Just again, I'm focused more on Gus and Birdie. Although with Munak, when we see Gus telling him all about Yellowstone and Pubba and all that, and Birdie standing there listening in.
Yes.
And you see her just getting teary and crying a little bit. It was a beautiful moment too. Like, she's clearly proud of the little boy she left behind and everything that he's done to become who he is, the young man, like we've said now. And then I think she's kind of getting the quick version of that, you know, a little bit listening to him speak and just realizing everything he's been through and how capable he is and like who he's become. And I think, again, because she's not like a birth mother, but she's the closest thing to a mother he has. And like, so even though if she didn't like give birth to him herself, she feels that, you know, motherly instinct to, you know, a big degree to leave him with Richard, with Pubba, and all of this is kind of for him. So you can see like how proud that she is. Like, she's had this kind of guilt. She even says to him, like, all this time I've been up here searching for answers and I could have been with you. And it's like, well, you're here now, which I thought was beautiful. It's like, you have me now, so we're okay. Let's move from here. And I think a lot of that guilt is kind of lifted, saying like, you did good, kid. You know, like, you're even without me, you turned out just fine.
Yeah. There was a lot of reunions and themes of guilt in this episode. And yeah, I do think Birdie, I think that was a mixture of guilt, but also pride too. Mm-hmm. At look who Gus has become, look what, you know, she's probably thinking, if I had to guess again, I don't know, but thinking that she made the right decision, that, you know, leaving him with Richard and that he did a really good job, and look at the, you know, nice young man that Gus has turned out to be. You know, he's kind, he's generous, and he's so full of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and especially in a world like they're in right now, like where like all hope seems to just be gone and no one seems to have any hope left, Gus has it for everyone. And that's such a rarity, I think, in the world that he's grown up in. And everything that he's been through and the loss that he's experienced, it would be totally like normal for him to like give up hope.
Yeah.
And through everything, he hasn't. And he's such a rare, you know, little guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, she's thinking about that. But I think she's also just feeling the guilt, too, you know, about not being there for him and knowing what he's endured. And especially when he's talking about when Pubba died. And then she, like, really starts to cry. So I think she knows now, oh, well, he's really gone. He is truly gone. And gets that confirmed, but then also knowing that Gus had to go through that, you know, yeah. And at such a young age that he's, you know, he didn't have Birdie, he, you know, lost his Pubba, and he's had to get people along the way to kind of build that family like he has with Big Man and Wendy and Becky. I can't imagine the emotions that were, mm-hmm. that were, you know, going through her in that moment. But, yeah, all that was so great to see.
Yeah. And that importance of how, you know, Gus, again, that hope and compassion that he has, it comes up several times in here to where even, because it's an extra note, you might have more to talk about with them, but at the out, like the, like little outpost area or whatever, the, it was like a station that they were in, but the outpost people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have Jep giving that speech there, and it's just like, the speech that got everybody riled up was, again, he's talking about Gus. Gus has been through this. He's this. He's this. It's like he's managing to inspire people into action. He's not even there. Just somebody talking about him does the trick. Like, that's how much of an impact he's made on people that, like, even just by proxy, people can be like, oh, yeah, we'll do anything for him. Got it. Which speaks a lot to his character and who he is.
Yeah, absolutely. He, mm-hmm. I think he definitely is, I mean, obviously he's special, and I think he definitely inspires a lot of people, even if he's not in that room with them.
Like, yeah.
Just through Jep, he was able to do that.
Yeah. Then I had a little snarky thing. It was like, oh no, Munok died, so now let's take his map and do the thing he begged us not to do, and then maybe talk a little shit about him. Like, promise me you're not going to be like that guy. Oh my God. you know? But, but no, just really kid. I mean, like, there was some great moments in him, but it was sad, but to see that juxtaposition between, like, Munok was the other end of the extreme, like, you know, the spectrum that Gus could have been,
yes.
in this world that's treated them the same way, where they're different, they've been hunted, they've been mistreated, they've been, you know, abused and set aside and looked at as animals and different. They've had similar lives. Luckily, Gus has had other people to lean on versus hiding away alone. And I think that's changed, you know, that's been what really set those paths in different places. But we see, again, Munok being the, I hate humans, I'm going to live my life alone in isolation from them, and they all should just die, and, you know, the world would be better off without them, versus Gus being like, if there's any good in humanity, then it's worth saving, and we're going to do everything we can to do it. He's got that compassion. So you see the juxtaposition of how, you know, it's the same person at the beginning and seeing how different he could be,
mm-hmm.
versus the person he has become. And I thought that was really cool to see.
That's a really good point. I didn't look at it that way as far as who Gus could have been. Mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder if Munok had his mom in his life longer than what he yeah. did. I don't know that she would have the long life that he did. I don't know if it's he himself as this first hybrid and there's something about him, or if it's all, I mean, we don't know. He's the like yeah. oldest hybrid. All the others, I mean, then there's Gus.
And Gus
then all
is the next oldest hybrid. Under
yeah.
him.
So we don't have like any other like, oh, is this the lifespan for hybrids? Mm-hmm. Is this normal? Or is there just something super special about Munok as him being like the first? I don't know. But obviously his mom wouldn't have, you know, had that longevity, but if he'd had his, you know, had her in his life longer, and if she was able to protect him from, there wasn't a lot of detail. I wasn't clear, and I don't want to get too far into Caribou Man just yet, because I'm sure we'll talk about him. I should probably call him by his yeah. name, Munok, and not just Caribou Man. but, you know, it would have been interesting had he had at least one person, if not multiple people in his life, like Gus has had.
Yeah.
You know, had he, you know, maybe turned out a little different and not had that. And I like that comparison that you had, that he's like on the other end of the spectrum from Zhang, where she's like looking to just completely annihilate and mm-hmm. eliminate hybrids from existence.
Yeah,
he's very much like humans need mm-hmm. to be eliminated. Like it's their time is up and it's now our time. And, you know, he was looking forward to, which unfortunately he isn't going to make it that far, but when the sun comes back after the long night is over, you know, that's all that will be left. And I thought, wow, that's, you know, that's extreme.
Yeah. And it's really sad to think about, again, the reason that he didn't survive was at the hands of another hybrid, that maybe the first other hybrid he had come into contact with other than Gus. But again, it was because of the actions of humans that had caused it that way.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah. And then lastly, I have with them is just like right there at the end, not the very end with the door, but right before that, Birdie and the dynamite, her grabbing those sticks of dynamite and kind of hiding it from Gus. She hears Gus coming in from behind and she quickly stuffs it into her bag. I wonder what she's up to with that. Is she planning on blowing up the cave and following with Munok's wishes of, you know, is there something in there? Because we saw her kind of being, what if he's right, you know? And is that in the back of her head? Like, is that the initial plan? Or is she going to see what Gus is capable of? Not knowing that Sing and Zhang and them are on their way there also. But, you know, is it a backup plan where she's like, if things go sideways, then we just blow it all up and let nature do its thing. And that's what we do. Or is that like her initial plan, which, I don't know, feels like she wouldn't want to put Gus in that kind of danger or, you know, go behind his back in that way. But is she, you know, is it just something she's holding on to because Munok might be right? And it's like, if that's where we have to go, then I will blow it up. I'm, you know, if Gus can do something with it and save people, great. But if it starts to fall into the wrong hands, then we just blow it all up and let the cards lay where they are.
I wonder that too. I was very concerned because she, as she's listening to Munok and she's like, I don't know, Gus, you know, maybe he's right. And I'm like, oh no. Let's not go down that path. And then, yeah, with the dynamite, and Gus isn't aware of that. So what the heck is she doing with it? She was very much mishandling that. Do you really throw dynamite into a bag? I don't think you're probably supposed to do that.
So there's a reference. But, there's a Lost reference I could make. I don't know. Has it been long enough that I can spoil something like that?
I can't remember what the threshold is, but we're probably there.
Probably.
But yeah, I was concerned too. I was like, "What you doing there, Birdie? With the dynamite? What are you thinking? Are you still, you know, is it a backup plan?" And then I was concerned. You know, like I said, when she was telling Gus, like, you know, if anything happens to me, promise me that you won't let that be your story. And I'm like, why do you gotta say stuff like that? Why don't say that? So I don't know if she thinks as like a plan B, like you were saying, knowing that Zhang could be on the way and knowing that she has every intention of misusing it. Is that her backup plan? Is she willing to blow up the entrance to the cave so no one can access it? And like you said, just let the cards fall where they may. Is she going to sacrifice herself in the process or something? You know, in order to do that, I don't know. My mind was going all kinds of different places. But I thought it was pretty ominous. And yeah. I was definitely worried. Like, please, Gus just found his mom. Do not take her away again. I can't deal with that. It's been too much. All right. Well, let's go ahead. Is it my turn?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about Manuk and what we got from his story. So it was nice to learn he actually has a name and confirmed anyway that he is in fact the first hybrid. I think we probably landed on that already, but you know, if we needed that, it was confirmed in this episode. It was interesting that, you know, as they're on their way to the church, they learn that they both hear that heartbeat. I have no idea what that means or what it relates to, if it has anything to do with the cave, if that's the thing that's like calling to them, as Gus says. I don't know, but they can both hear it. So I don't know if it's a them thing. Is it a hybrid thing?
Yeah, I know. That's one of those, like I mentioned earlier, there's so many questions that I don't even know if we're going to get answered in this time frame now that... Yeah, like these hybrid connections, again, going back to season one where we've seen Gus, other animals show up to help Gus, not even hybrids, but just animals. Like, what is this connection? And then, yeah, this heartbeat thing, because it's like they could hear each other's, because, like, you know, Gus was out there because he could hear Munoch's heartbeat, and then he's like, how did you find me? Where did you know where I was to save me? And he's like, basically, I could hear your heartbeat, and I knew something was wrong, so I came.
Yeah, interesting. So, not sure what that means, and if we'll even find that out. It was heartbreaking to hear his story, and like I was kind of alluding to whenever I was talking about him earlier, he's got a pretty good reason to dislike humans mm-hmm. after his story. And I don't know, are we supposed to know the people that did those things to him, cut his antlers, treated him like an animal? Was it the researchers that Birdie worked with way back when they were trying to find the cave? I don't know.
I don't think so. Because it seems like, because he was still young when his mother passed away. But like there was people there, because whoever the guy was that came to the church, which again, that was weird, because he was like, the people are waiting outside. And then he was like, okay, you can't come with us. Then why did you come in and tell me they're waiting? But yeah, it was kind of immediately, you know, he was looked at even right away. They said, you know, oh, he's, you know, at the touch of the devil, and they view him in this way. So then after his mother died, then it was, I guess, just other people that lived in the area, because it wasn't like Thacker's people, because they all died from the sick right. in the ship. So yeah, I'm not sure. I guess just other local people there that his mother had gotten in contact with. Maybe that's, you know, the church, because it seemed like it was like a priest that came in to get them or talk to them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because they seem pretty isolated. So, mm-hmm. you know, I can't imagine that a church is just out there in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. There had to be some kind of community or some people close by, I would think, anyway, especially in a place like that. It doesn't seem for it to make sense to have a lot of people spread out in northern Alaska, where it seems like it'd be good to be around other people and not be so isolated.
Was it abandoned after? Because I don't know if it was confirmed, but it sounded like, because he mentioned the way his mother died when he was young, was it the sick? Mm. Like, was it still around? And did she eventually get it? And maybe that's what kind of wiped out all the people in that area, which left the church abandoned and there on its own. And then he just kind of stayed there.
Yeah. It's not clear. So I feel like there's some, you know, I don't want to say gaps in a story, just like, you know, not all the information. So I'm just, that makes me curious. It may not be important, but I'm like, well, who did those things? Were there people still there? Was it villagers? And, you know, just kind of wanted to understand a little bit more about that. But just knowing that, you know, and knowing that he was so young when it happened and he didn't have anyone there to protect him, then yeah, he's got pretty good reason to dislike humans.
And human mothers he hates a little less. Yeah, because he had a good mother there. And then so, you know, seeing again, it was the picture, knowing that Birdie is also mother to a hybrid. Hashtag dear mom. definitely a soft spot for her specifically.
For her, and also, you know, not even knowing Gus then, but was like, I didn't want to take another mom away from a hybrid.
Yeah.
The same that had happened to me. And I was like, okay, so see, you still have some compassion in your heart. Yeah. You know, he's not completely cold. You know, he, like I said, he's got good reason for disliking humans, but there is still a part of him that has some compassion. And then I thought, gosh, when his mom was talking to him, you know, as a baby, and they're being abandoned by some shitbag people. And she says the world isn't ready for him yet, but I was like, the world isn't ready now either. Like, the world did not improve, evolve, or get better. So, you know, knowing that she left him, and, you know, that the world wasn't ready for him, and then he got treated that way, I can't imagine whatever it was he went through.
I have an exact note about that as well. The world's not ready for you, one day will be. And so, unfortunately, it never was. Not for him, but still for those like him, maybe, because Gus carries, is where I'm going with that. Yeah, Gus is carrying that hope now. So again, it goes back to like that big kind of character thing about Gus. Really what defines Gus throughout this whole series is hope.
Yeah, absolutely. The hope that little kid has just shines so brightly and really is like so infective to other people mm-hmm. that it makes other people change. It's made them hopeful, gives them a reason for going. And that's why I was wondering if, because I was like, yeah, I hear Munak, he's very much stating like, don't go to the cave. I'm not going to let you go to the cave. And it's, you know, that location's going to die with me. But he gave them that tusk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, are you sure you didn't want them to find it? Because you're kind of giving them the key to finding the location, you know, once they were able to kind of match it up with the map there.
Because, like, the story was on the tusk and he used it to help tell the story. But it's like, I mean, he knows the story. It's his life. Like, he didn't need it mm-hmm. to tell the story. So there's... Yeah, I wonder. Again, where he was like, find a walrus tusk, find it, and that will tell the story. And I was like, that's an insane quest to send them. Oh, the one right there. Never mind, we're good.
Very interesting, yeah. But it was sad to kind of, you know, as he's talking and telling a story of what his life looked like, you know, losing his mom at such an early age, being mistreated, being alone, not having anyone look after him, basically just living in isolation and being the guardian of this cave to prevent people from finding it. You know, he lost his mom, treated like an animal. His antlers were cut off. You know, humanity really, really showed the worst of itself mm-hmm. to him. And that's awful. And seeing more bad behavior with, like I said, the people that left his mom and him as a baby behind. Like, they're just, sorry, you can't come along because, you know, your son's a hybrid. What if she had, like, no life skills or survival skills?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're leaving her in this awful climate. You know, you're you know, in Alaska, for crying out loud. It's not like you can just, look, oh, I'll just go grow a garden and just hunt. You know, what mm-hmm. if you don't know how to do those things? It was just all these things running through my head. Like, you're just abandoning them to die.
Mm-hmm.
It was just gross. So, anyway, just getting to know... Munak and his story and about his mom, and I was really sad when he died.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, he saw the vision of his mom, which it was Birdie, but he saw his mom. I'm curious what Birdie whispered to him.
Yeah, that was because, yeah, it was kind of in his vision, his mom was giving him something important, but then, yeah. I was like, what does Birdie have to say to him secretly? I don't know.
Yeah. It was interesting.
Maybe she's promising him that she is going to destroy the cave. You know, that there is this, like, don't worry, like, it will not fall in the wrong hands, I promise you. Something like that.
Yeah, I wonder. Because it visually, like, his hand kept squeezing hers, like... something important. I don't know if that's what the intention was, but I was like, she's telling him something, and
yeah,
it seems kind of important. So yeah, what was it? Was it related to that?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it was such a short, like, introduction. We get to finally meet him and hear the story, and then he dies in the same episode, which was awful. What's your next point?
Well, that was one of my points as well. So okay. I've threw in some of my thoughts and stuff with yours, but I'll
carry on.
I think I've got a few other, like, little things about him. Just a random note, the narwhal tip on his spear was really cool. You only get to see it really, right, like, in, like, really well. You get to see it when him and Gus are still walking through the snow before they get back to the church. And I was like, oh, that's really cool.
I didn't even notice that at all. That was really good.
You know, like, yeah, like the tip of his spear, it was like a narwhal, and then, like, the horn was the spear at the end. I was like, that's cool.
That is cool.
Is it his injuries? It was like one of the boys lost a fang biting into him. Ow.
Wow, dang.
Let's see. Again, just trying to figure out the big picture of the cave, the blood of the earth, all of that stuff. Because I remember, was it last week or the episode before? Because we recorded closer together, so I mix them up sometimes. With Zhang you know, I've had something where I was saying, like, Jean could be completely wrong, and actually the cave, what they find in the cave is what ends humanity and takes over humanity at all. But then after hearing Munok speak this episode, I was like, maybe not, because he seems to believe that humans finding the cave actually could, you know, end the hybrids and the sick and, you know, be detrimental to hybrids to some extent. And because we see him taking that strong stance of nature should take its course, humanity's had its time, so them finding the cave would be terrible with that view, which means that maybe Zhang and Sing are right, that they could end hybrids or something by finding it. So I'm not sure. We'll just have to see what it all, how it all plays out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I thought I was onto something, and then the way Munok talked about it, I was like, maybe not. But you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but the way that he put it, I was like, yeah, we've mentioned that before. His exact quote was, "People are the disease, and the sick is the cure." And again, just Birdie, the way that she, you know, isn't appalled and horrified by that, but she's, what if he's right? You know, she kind of seems like, after all the things that I've seen and even what just Gus has said, he's been through and all this, it's like, you know, there's a strong argument to be made for that being the case. But we leave it to Gus to be that unwavering hope and faith in people anyway, regardless of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, so that's what I had on that one.
Love
it. So we
can
bounce back to yours.
Well, let's see. Okay, we talked about Jep, Wendy, and Becky. That was one of them. But I guess I wanted to talk not just about the reunion, because obviously that was super exciting, regardless how they got there. Yeah. You know, yes, we've talked about that. But end result, we've got them all back together, at least part of them anyway. Little mini reunion. But what I really liked about that scene with Jep and those folks from the outpost, and this is kind of a short note, but, you know, Jep can certainly relate as everyone's talking, like, we never should have let outsiders in. This was all your fault for letting them in. We should have listened to Walter. You know, they're really angry at Jep. They're like, we should just turn him over and get them out of this mess. You know, everybody's just kind of, you know, looking out for themselves. And yeah. I think Jep sees himself in those people. He can relate. He was in the same kind of headspace, you know, not long before he, you know, met Gus. And, you know, he talks about that. He talks about how he isolated himself and how he was only out for himself, but then talks about when he met Gus, you know, he did change his point of view, and that Gus, you know, showed him that value in fighting alongside people and fighting for others, not just for yourself. And Gus talks about that too in this episode. And I loved that, hearing it from Jep, because it's like, wow, what a different person he is in season three than when we met him in season one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's what I want. You know, it's like, that to me is, you know, what it should be is, you know, a better world, what it looks like, you know, fighting alongside people and for other people, not just for yourself. That speech was a great one. So
yeah,
I really loved that. And kind of my point, whenever, you know, it's like Gus's influence and his hope and how he is like, his that bright light of hope that he has inside of him has shined on everyone else, and it's changed people and lit something within them to then continue on with what he's trying to do and wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, everybody went from, let's turn in Jep and, you know, just work with Zhang, to like, no, we're going to work with him and we're going to fight against her pretty quickly. It even got a fine from Milton, so you know that it worked.
Yeah, but I liked that. So I was like, there we go. That's the humanity, you know, that I'm looking for and that I think is worth saving.
Yeah.
But yeah, convincing that many people in that short amount of time, probably not as likely. But it's a show, so.
Yes.
what's your next point?
All right, the last combo duo. This time, the one we really don't like.
I know. Talk about
Sing and Zhang. Just the that dastardly duo this episode. Which I'm very curious because it seems like they're not on the same page, but are. Like I've through this episode, I have a feeling that Zhang is just going along with Sing and doesn't really buy into it. You know, he has things like, you know, oh, you have something more powerful than science? And he's like, yes, I have a blood sacrifice. And he's like, oh, all right, team, Doctor's a cuckoo bird. This was a mistake. Let's just, you know, like you almost expect her to have that reaction. But she goes along with it. She listens, hears him out, which because she takes him seriously, even if it's just an act, that's what he latches onto. You know, big man didn't want any of it, but he found somebody who will take the woo-woo shit. And that's Zhang. She's listening. So, of course, in the position she's in, you know, she's got no other options right now. So she's almost like, ah, screw it. Let's go with Dr. Cave Dreams, I guess. You know, he wants to ritualistically murder this child so badly. But if it gets us what we want, then I guess let him have at it. I don't know. He's just obsessed, like we talked about last week. I think just that one track mind and the things that he's saying. And a lot of it is like just planning horrific things all based on belief and assumption. I was like, oh, so like real life.
Yes.
But I did have a hard time believing she was really buying it. Like I have this feeling that she's going to use him to get to where and what she wants and then just stab him in the back. And you know what? Fine by me. You know, if he's really gone off that deep end, you know, it's like she's talking about, we both lost spouses. I'm here because of mine, and I assume you're here because of yours. And he goes on to talk about Ronnie. I was like, no. Ronnie would be horrified and disgusted at the things that you have done and what you've become. Like, don't try to even act for a second like you're doing this in her memory, because it's why she walked out on you, is because of this, because of who you are here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And now they are waking up the beast, which I believe is the same driller that was used by Birdie and her team that pulled up the initial samples that became this strain of the sick and Gus himself. I think it was that same machine.
Oh, wow.
Not 100% on that, but I think so, because I remember the, like, drilling in the, like, ice cores. Mm-hmm. And then pulling them up, and that's kind of what it looked like that thing had, was that, like, core driller. Yeah, and then lastly, my, like, little just notice on that is the knife that Rosie hands Sing is the exact same one he was holding with blood dripping off of it in his vision. And it's like, you know, go straight to Michael Scott. Nope, don't like that. No.
I did not even catch that. Mm-hmm. That is pretty ominous.
Yes.
Yikes. Well, I mean, obviously, this was one of my points, too, so I'll just add to what you're saying, and we can talk about it. In this episode, we do get the confirmation, which didn't leave much room for doubt as to where they were going, but just reinforced that theory that we did have about saying that he's needs to sacrifice Gus. Based on his vision and Thacker's journal. And, you know, he thinks that this prophecy that he keeps, or this in this vision that he keeps seeing, is just going to fix everything. And of course, he has to be the one to do it. It can't be, you know, someone else or
he's
whatever.
He's got this, like, savior complex going on as well.
It's so bizarre. I mean, he's so far gone. And I'm like, I don't know if he just had a temporary, like, sanity lapse or something whenever he was with the group, because I mean I know that he was pretty focused on, yep, I'm gonna help Gus get to Alaska and nothing's gonna stop me and nothing's gonna change that. But it, you know, he seemed to be a little tampered down, and now it's like he's so far gone, and just with the quietness, you know, he's not being completely maniacal about it. He's just got this calmness about it, which makes me so nervous. But
yeah, it's scarier because it's,
yeah,
calm and collected evil is scarier than crazy.
Yeah, quiet scares me more than the loudest person in the room. Mm-hmm. So you know, he's being quiet about it, and he's, so to me he's kind of scary. And when he's talking about, you know, because Zhang is like, oh, well, it's going to be science. You know, science is the thing that got us here, and science is going to be what fixes it. And he's like, yeah, you know, pooey on science. I devoted my life to it, and it's not gotten me very far. I'm going to go this other route by these visions and this journal and, you know, this vision I keep having, and it's going to involve a blood sacrifice.
Right.
And even
science is cool and all, but have you tried ritual blood? Ancient rituals? Have you tried that?
Even she looks horrified. And Zhang, we have established, is terrible, like absolute garbage human, absolutely no redemption in my opinion for her whatsoever. Like, I just want all the bad things to happen to her. And when she looks horrified when he mentions blood sacrifice, it's like, hello, do you not see like how like nutty you sound? So I thought that was interesting, like her reaction. She's like, oh, or maybe it was just more of a, okay, so he's gone. He's
got it. And that's where I think she is she's like, doctor's lost it, but you know what? His obsession could still get us where we need to go, so we'll roll with it for now.
I agree with you. I don't think she really thinks that she needs him. I just think she thinks he might be useful, or because he's got the knowledge. He could be useful in some way in making sure that she accomplishes her mission. So I really feel like that's the only reason that she's kept him on. And what was really disturbing is when he's talking about his karmic debt, and when just the fact that he thinks that this karmic debt will be wiped out by killing someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that's how it works, dude. You know, I don't feel like...
And not just any someone, but like the most hopeful, positive, loving, caring child on the planet.
Right. Like, I don't know. No, don't think that's how that works. Like, I have to sacrifice someone in order to cleanse my karma and clean, you know, get a clean slate. Wow. That I was like, okay, yeah, if I didn't know it before, that solidified it for me. You were gone, saying, no more redemption thoughts for you, from me at all. He can go. And I won't be sad about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few notes, but those are like my main points. You said that was your last point as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go on with your notes and we'll cover those.
All right. Just a few. I've talked about some of them. Against Sianna knowing where to find Nuka at Birdie's base.
Yeah.
It was nice. And then apparently that was the plan for everybody at the outpost. That's where we go.
We have nowhere else to go but this tiny little outpost.
Talked about Jep's speech, and then while they're kind of coming up with the plans, I was trying to figure out, why do Becky and Wendy want Jep to leave to find Gus so badly, you know? It's like, we don't need you here, go to him, and it's like, I don't know, I think somebody like Jep could be very useful in a fight against Zhang's people. I don't know why you don't think he's helpful. And then he's like, oh, Gus doesn't need me, and then it was their line, said, but don't you need him? And that was the line that seemed to really... that he took to heart, whatever that means to him. I'm not sure.
I had the same exact thought, so I'm glad that you brought that up.
But then it leads to the very end of the episode then, where I was like, you know, the pounding on the door and who's there. And I'm like, I mean, out of all the options it could be showing up there, I guess I hope it's Jep. Although his reasoning, I'm not sure. And then how would he even find the church? How would he know where that is? And he better not use stars as his answer. But I don't know. We'll see.
I hadn't even thought of that. I was thinking, like, who the hell's banging on that door? That's one of my notes, like, what the hell? Who could that be? And it would be pretty interesting since no one else could seem to find it. Like, Birdie was there for how many years and couldn't find that church?
Right.
Like, no one could find it, and night has come upon them, and Yeah, he finds it.
Needs to be, like, a much better thing. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like most likely it's Jep, but I feel like I'm not going to be happy with that. Like, it's like, ah, you could have done something better. Is it Sing and Zhang coming to the door? I don't know. And then part of me is like, let's just go completely, like, out of left field. Like, let's just bring back, either bring back somebody that I'm not even thinking of right now, or, like, just throw a curveball, let it be something wild that I don't even know what it is, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, if it's Jep, then we're really going to have to just suspend our disbelief, mm-hmm. you know, a little more. He did not even come to mind. I don't know. Maybe I wasn't caffeinated enough or something. Didn't even make that connection that they said that in that little outpost there. And then the banging on the door that he might have actually left, looking for
it's,
him. It didn't even.
It's Jordan. He shows up. that hit to the head with the wrench reset me to factory settings, and I'm a good guy again now. And I'm here with the wolf hybrids, and we want to you to come join us for a spot of tea. Because I'm still waiting for that. I don't know.
I'm really hoping for some, like, deprogramming for those kids.
Right.
You know, I'm holding on to some kind of faith that you know, they get a happy ending in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that happens.
I was gonna point out just one quick little scene between the sisters, between Rosie and Ginger.
Yeah.
Like, it was just very quick, but it was a powerful line where, you know, Ginger comes in and is like, you know, for what it's worth, I am sorry about what happened to Bruno. And Rosie says, you don't have to pretend to care about them, you know. And Ginger's response is, no, you just have to pretend that you don't. And I was like, ow. But very apt, for sure. Like, definitely what's going on there. And hopefully that did something to Rosie to hear that, because she's needed to hear that for sure.
100%. Yeah, I thought that was really powerful. And I'm curious about her sister. Like, she has seen how their mother treats those hybrid wolves,
mm-hmm.
her own grandkids, her blood. Is she not concerned at all that if none of this works and she delivers this baby, that it's a hybrid? Does she have any concern at all that, you know, her mom's either going to fail, it won't work, whatever it is that ends up happening? In the end, that it will ever fix, you know, hybrids, or, you know, knowing how far along she is. Is it somehow going to revert her baby from being a hybrid to a human baby? How can she look at her mom and be like, what if what you're doing doesn't work? Mm. Are you going to hate my baby as much as what you've hated Rosie's, and treat that child the same as what you've treated her boys?
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like, because this whole season, you know, series, I mean, this season's really the only time we've seen her. But yeah, Ginger has been, anytime she's in a scene with Zhang going on and on about that, like, she's very meek and quiet and reserved. Like, almost like, this isn't my place to speak. But it's just like, oh, this is what mom wants. This is what, but I could feel like in her head, she probably is terrified of her mother and what she's capable of doing to that baby if it doesn't go according to plan.
Yeah, I would be scared. And look, I get it. Their mom is like powerful and intimidating and all the things, and doesn't sound like she minds at all, you know, kicking her kids out of the family, because how dare they get pregnant and then mm-hmm. deliver hybrid babies, you know? So I get that maybe she is just like, I'm just going to not say anything. You know, maybe that's how she's dealing with it. But I would be like, you know, I guess just seeing that mistreatment of hybrid kids over and over and over again. We saw them at the ranch, mm-hmm. you know, and then the wolf boys. I mean, and that's just what we've seen. So I don't know. I would be like, what if you were wrong? You know, and what if none of this works and I still deliver a hybrid baby, and you're gonna, you know, send me out to the woods to live with just, you know, and maybe survive and maybe not, and hate these kids. It's just, it's weird. But I did like that moment. Yeah, I agree.
And then lastly is kind of the music note, but also like with the scene that came with it, you know, the polar night countdown ends, the sun drops, it's officially here. Ominous, foreboding, like it,
yeah,
that scene carried the weight of something big is about to happen, like we are shifting gears, and the music really helped with that. Like it was Leonard Cohen's Avalanche, which was just so good, but it was, you know, setting that tone and then cutting different people, you know, the cars driving across the snow with Zhang and Singh as they've got what they're headed into, and then Gus and Birdie preparing to head out, and everything's just kind of taking place there. And again, we talk about it every week. The music is just perfect. I love it so much.
Yeah.
And especially in that scene with this week's episode was just, it really set that tone as we're going into these last two episodes.
Yeah, for sure. Always great musical choices. The last little note that I had was just Diplomat Gus. You know, that's what I was thinking of him in this episode, this little diplomat. And it, you know, when he was, I liked his conversation with Munoz, and I don't know, it was just so touching and heartfelt. And it's one of the things that I really love about Gus's character, as he was like, you know, because Munoz's like, you know, humans are bad and they deserve to be eliminated. And I'm not going to, you know, share the location of the cave. No one needs to try to reverse anything. And Gus is like, but no, that means, you know, my mom's going to die and Big Man and Becky and, you know, people that he cares about. And I wondered if maybe that did get through to Munoz just a little bit. And maybe that's why he asked them for the tusk. And right. He's kind of giving them that lead without actually telling them. I don't know if that was his goal or not. I really don't know if he thought that that's what he was going to do, or if he was just wanting to share that as part of his story. I don't know. But I just loved that once again, Gus is relating to someone, you know, hybrid to hybrid, human to human in this emotional way, you know, about, you know, hey, I understand, you know, I lost my pub at young, but I had people that cared about me and I care about them and I don't want anything to happen to them. And it was like he was trying to share that hope with him. And I just love that so much because we get to see him really shine in this episode. So I thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah.
So proud of our little Gus.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was watching the episode a second time on my laptop. So I just finished it, was like, you know, had all the emotions super fresh. And I immediately jumped out so it didn't go to the next episode. But it took me back to like the main Sweet Tooth page where it shows like all kinds of clips from like season one, and it's kind of going through the whole thing. And I sat there and I just watched it. And I was like, oh my gosh, look how far we've come. You know, we get to see Pubba and when he meets Jep for the first time, and little Gus, he just seems so much smaller then. And it just, I was just like starting to just like get emotional all over again, thinking, oh my gosh, we've only got a couple more episodes and look where we've come and what we've been through and this whole journey. It was a whole thing. It was just me being silly, but
it's great though. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I'll miss the show for sure. Yeah. It's been quite the ride.
It has. All right. Well, let's see what our listeners had to say about this episode. Let's start with the first one.
All right. First one comes from Arlene, who says, OMG, I'm so excited to get this feedback in. I just found your show and binged the first two seasons of Sweet Tooth along with your podcast. Awesome. Thank you for checking us out. Glad you found us. Says, I love your takes and the feedback you get from your listeners, especially Steve's voicemails. Yes, we all love a good live Steve. Now on to this episode. Dr. Addy is irredeemable to me now. Felt so bad for Big Man when he said I should have left him back in Idaho. The cave seems like a bad idea altogether. How will sacrificing an innocent being make anything better? On the other hand, what do Birdie and Gus expect to find that can fix it? Why is the original hybrid blocking people from getting there, especially if his mom left a map? Jordan scared me when he was talking to Bear about Zhang keeping women around, but I didn't think this show would go there, and I'm glad they didn't. Unless Rosie kills Zhang herself and rehabs her wolf babies, she can join the Go F Yourself Club. I'll stop here because I don't want to run long. Can't wait to hear what you guys think. Thanks so much. Thank you so much for finding us, listening, and then writing in. That's amazing.
Yeah, thanks, Arlene. It was great to hear from you. All right. Catherine says, what a roller coaster of emotions. Gus finding Birdie at last in the reunion of Jeopard, Becky, and Wendy was so sweet. But to lose Caribou Man so soon was cruel. I thought there was a chance that Jeopard and Sing were tricking Zhang, but Sing is way too serious about sacrificing Gus. Wendy's talk to Becky was perfect, and I hope there's a happy ending for the remaining hybrid wolves.
Yes.
Me too.
And then this one comes from Emily, who says, really enjoyed this episode. I'm so happy we didn't have to wait any longer for Gus to find Birdie. And combine that with Wendy and Bear's sweet reunion, there may have been some tears. So yeah, Sing is just pure evil. Ronnie would be so disappointed in him. I'm guessing all our characters will end up at the cave, so maybe Sing or Zhang will end up being the sacrifice. One could only hope. I feel so sad for the Caribou Man, who was clearly badly mistreated. From what he told Gus, it sounds like his mother is the reason the Sick got out. Help me understand this timeline, because the Caribou Man is over 100 years old, but weren't we led to believe the Sick started around the time Gus was born? Yeah, I think it's two separate instances where the first time that was surrounding Munoch was very limited to there because...
And isolated.
Burke, yeah, his father made the decision to not let any of the team leave, and they all died there. And then maybe it was isolated to, maybe that's what happened to the people in that area. But yeah, but then this second wave of the Sick, or the second instance of it, is what this show is about, is when the people, it wasn't Birdie's team, but it was the her boss and that team, the company she worked for, went out and tried again, because I think it was one of Thacker's, like, relatives, right? Like a ancestor, like...
Oh, gosh.
Thacker was like her great-grandfather or something like that, and so she tried to pick up where he left off, and... Mm-hmm. With modern technology, got further, which then spread the Sick much further globally, probably.
Yep. They found it again, and again, not learning from, like, Thacker went the wrong way and did this. Maybe we shouldn't do that, too. That's what's so frustrating, like, history repeating itself, you know, all over again. You're not learning from people who've been there before. So frustrating. All right, we got an email from our good friend Daphne.
Yeah.
She says, hi, Rima and Paik. Finally, the reunion we have been waiting for, Gus and Birdie. Also, a bunch of questions answered now that we are on the home stretch. The Sick being a cure for humans as parasites and nature righting the wrong. I appreciate all the backstory and explanation we received from Munoch. Wendy and Becky getting this bonding time was special. Wendy reminding Becky to put the blame where it belongs, Zhang, instead of blaming herself, showed wisdom beyond her years. Mm-hmm. The Jep-Wendy-Becky hug was awesome, and I loved Jep's speech about Gus's undying belief in fighting for the future. Sing and Zhang belong together. Ginger and Rosie's exchange about pretending to care or not about the wolf boys made me sad. I hope Rosie will do the right thing and stop Zhang by not prepping the beast. She still can. It's not too late. I'm glad that everyone is sort of back together, or at least in the same general area. I'm so worried for Jep, Becky, and Sienna if the Sick isn't stopped. However, I think Birdie is planning to close the cave once and for all, which could mean the end for them. Leonard Cohen's avalanche was the perfect way to end this episode. Daphne. I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Daphne, so much for that email. We do have a couple of voicemails. So I know that Steve had sent us a voicemail for episode 5. It did not come through. It took a couple of attempts, and we were finally able to get it to our inbox, thankfully. So this voicemail is for episode 5, last week's episode. Let's see what Steve thought about that one.
Hello, Paik and Rima. This is Steve, and this is going to be for Sweet Tooth, Season 3, Episode 5, The Telltale Heart. I'm really glad I listened to your last week's coverage, so I heard it's literally Saturday morning right now when I'm recording this. So what was Thacker looking for when he found the cave? Was he looking for, like, the Fountain of Youth or something? Joe just answered my question, the Fountain of Youth. Oh, what's growing out of him? Oh, it's the flower. Okay, how did Sienna and them find... Oh, find him. Find them on this random beachhead. How did Tex find them? What? They, okay. I'm just going to suspend disbelief that everybody wound up in Alaska at the same place at the same time. Jordan, you have not turned into a nice guy. Yeah, Walt, move. Let him by. Dr. Singh holding up his pinkies. I don't know if that was to show that he doesn't have the sick or kind of a modified FU. Oh, Birdie drew the cave. Or, excuse me, Dr. Thacker, the captain, drew the cave. And I had to pause it for creepy little Arctic fox saying, "He's hearing it. He's hearing it." Okay, and Dr. Singh, a page of the journal, just fell out about sacrificing a deer in front of the cave. Dr. Singh found it. I don't like this. Oh, and Zhang just point blank shot Walt. I mean, he was a jerk, but dang. Okay, that's quite a jump. Recorded Dr. Singh that from the first hybrid could come the cure for all the hybrids. Maybe. And that was a cool move by Bear, kicking up her legs and getting out of the hook. And Wendy with the wrench. I'm not tired of fighting back. And Gus and Luca are going to head out on their own. I'm sure Jep and then Singh and the rest of them will catch up with them eventually. Ooh, have faith, Jep says. Doc, are you really betraying them or is this a ploy? And now all heck is breaking loose. I don't know what's happening. Are the people going to escape? Jep, what? The pack seems to be attacking just as many of Zhang's men as anybody else. Oh no, and one has found Gus and Nuka's scent and the rest are following him. Dr. Singh just dropped the book in the fire, and now he's the only one. Oh, and this is tense, the pack confronting Gus. But who is this? The Caribou Man? Ooh, the eyes of the Caribou Man. And I'm going to watch it, the next one pretty much later today, because I'm going to be out of town the weekend of the 15th.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Steve. Sorry we did not get that for our last episode, but as promised, we will play it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what his thoughts were for episode 6.
Hello, Strange Indeed. This is Steve, and this is for Sweet Tooth season 3, episode 6. Here There Be Monsters. Oh, okay. So that was the Caribou Man when he was a baby with his mother from the ship, right?
Oh, Birdie and Gus meeting. Oh.
Love it. Neither one of them know what they're doing, but we're going to go find Gus and Jep in this, whatever this snowmobile is. And now saying you're talking crazy, you have to sacrifice Gus. Come on. Of course the Caribou Man knows what maple syrup is. He's old, not stupid. Okay, so Wendy and Bear are together, and now we've got Nuka, Sienna, and Jep together, and we've got Birdie and Gus and Caribou Man together, so we just got to get everybody in the same spot. Wow, they're all arguing with themselves about who they're going to give up to maintain their... This is so wrong. Oh, powerful speech, Jeppard. Powerful speech right here. This is great. Yeah, they've got to work together. Oh, I hope not. The sick is the cure for people? That means all... No. There are good humans worth fighting for. That's what Gus is saying right now. Dr. Singh, you're looking for redemption, but you're not going to get it by killing Gus. Come on, man. Oh, the countdown was for the polar night. Okay, so how long does the night last? 30 days? 30 whatever? And why is Birdie taking explosives to the cave? Is she going to try to close it up? Oh, and who's at the door knocking for Birdie and Gus? I guess we'll find out next time.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Steve, the voicemails as always. And thank you, everyone, for taking the time to write in, send your voicemails, emails, dropping us a line on Facebook. We so appreciate it. We've only got a couple more episodes to go.
Yeah. I did want to shout out one little thing that somebody in our group, listener and friend, Nathan Eshelman, shared with people in Podcasticon, the Facebook groups and stuff that is somewhat, you know, connected to us. He even said in his post, for fans of Strange Indeed, because we cover all of Mike Flanagan's shows. And so I haven't checked it. I haven't listened to it yet. I subscribed. I'm going to listen because I'm very curious. But Mike Flanagan himself has just launched a new podcast. Yes. So I want to definitely talk about that. It's called Director's Commentary with Mike Flanagan. And it's just episodes of him getting conversations like almost like kind of what I do with, like, you know, me and Daphne do with Run for Your Lives, where kind of covers and talks about a horror movie, and he, you know, or different movies. It seems mostly kind of that's his realm, so he's staying there. I don't know, maybe he'll branch out, but he has the directors of movies come on and kind of have this kind of color commentary, talk about the movie, some behind the scenes stuff. And the first two episodes are up. I think the first one, again, I haven't listened, but might just be more of a interview with Mike Flanagan as he's talking about kind of his directing style and different things and influences and himself. And then the first episode where they're talking about a movie, he has the director or directors. I'm not sure because the bios on his Spotify are a little screwed up and it's just the same one twice for the both episodes. So he's got to get that fixed. But either way, Ready or Not is the first movie that he's covering with the director of that movie. So I'm definitely, we've covered that one over on Run For Your Live. So I'm excited to check that out and listen to maybe a little bit more extra behind the scenes stuff with the director of that with Flanagan. So, and Flanagan's just, again, we've talked about his like TikTok and stuff. He's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And he's just, his personality is so great. And so like him hosting a podcast, I'm so into listen to that and get his personality that way.
And this, look, I'll show you, not everyone can see this, but I've had this screenshot that I meant to share. That nice. Hey everyone, Mike Flanagan has a podcast, and I was going to post it to our socials, but guess who forgot? And it's been sitting in my photos. So thank you.
So for I picked it up. I got it. Yeah.
You got it. As soon as you said that, I was like, oh crap! I meant to share that and like tell everyone. Like, guess what? Guess he's got a freaking podcast.
Yeah.
We all have to listen, right? And go support the master of horror. Mike Flanagan. In Flanagan we trust. Yes. So yeah, I'm super excited. Thanks for putting that on the podcast. I'll go ahead and share it for maybe those who aren't listening to our coverage of Sweet Tooth. You know, we've got some, you know, followers that do listen to our Mike Flanagan coverage and would be super interested. So I will go ahead and post it on our socials. I can't believe it was like Thursday. That's when I had it Thursday when he posted it. I'm a ding dong. Life happens and I get distracted. Thanks for bringing that up. I'm super interested to listen to that because, I find him, I watch his TikToks and I also follow his wife. She is absolutely amazing too. And she involves him in some of her TikToks, which is just absolutely delightful. So I think his podcasting will be fantastic. Thanks for bringing that up. So next week here on Strange Indeed, we're going to be covering season 3, episode 7, The Road Ends Here.
Bum, bum, bum. Don't like that.
Don't like that at all.
And how do you have another episode after that one titled that? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to get to it. I will probably watch that tonight.
I gotta see who's banging on that door. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna be catching it later.
Yeah, so definitely check that out. Give us, you know, feedback and stuff. We love that feedback. So you want to write in, leave us messages, voicemails, all of that stuff for that episode next week. Definitely do that. You can go to podcastica.com to find all the links and contact information on how to do so.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows like Run For Your Lives. Anything you want to tease this week?
Let's see. What are we doing this week? We are doing Office Uprising this week, which I had never heard of until Daphne brought it up. It's, you know, it was a Crackle original, I think, from years ago. But basically a like weapons manufacturing office building, has this new energy drink that's supposed to create like super soldiers, and it gets out and it really just turns them all into zombies. And then you have a couple of different people in the office building trying to survive all of their zombified, coworkers in the building.
Nice.
So it's like Mayhem or Belko Experiment, but different. but it's interesting. Yeah. It stars, Britton Thwaites and, Karin Soni and Zachary Levi is in it too. So it's an interesting one. So yeah, you can definitely check that out over on Run For Your Lives.
Sounds super interesting. So yeah, check out all of our other shows. Dragon Cast is going full swing with season 2 of House of the Dragon. We're getting ready to pick up on Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai, the final season, is it 5? Gosh, it's so weird to say that out loud.
6, maybe.
6? Yeah, I've lost track, honestly. Yeah, it's weird because they're splitting this up. Like there's five episodes they're going to release this week, and then five more in like November, and then the final episodes are going to drop sometime in 2025. We don't know yet, but let's see, we're recording this on the 16th. I guess the 18th is when those five episodes are going to drop. So look out for our coverage there. Yeah. We're going to be picking that up again. So super excited.
I'm excited to listen to you guys do that. I always enjoy listening to you on podcasts and stuff other than just talking to you on this one. Yeah. So the Cobra Kai stuff is always great, which also you mentioned Dragon Cast, because you're going back on there for an episode soon, aren't you?
Yeah, next week.
Yeah.
I'll be filling in as a guest. So yeah, excited to join that podcast after hosting full time on that season one. I took a step back. So it'd be nice to kind of step in there again and, you know, hash out that that awesome show with some good friends.
Been brutal.
Yeah. So a lot going on sure in Podcastica with us and our podcasts. So, be sure to go show everyone some love while you're there.
Yeah. One last little shout out again, self-promotion. My other podcast that we just launched, we've got three episodes out, third episode launched this
you're
week.
Busy guy.
The Buffalo podcast, which is outside the realm of usual Podcastica. It's not covering TV shows, movies, or anything. It's just me and Daphne from Remedy for Lives with our friends Jeff and Jerry getting together and just having fun, just having conversations, catching up with each other. But we also try to make each other laugh. We play little games and stuff. It's been, I think, the one that we just released this week. Jerry was kind of running the game and stuff that way and was just kind of getting our answers on shower questions, shower thoughts kind of things. Or what's your favorite thing you've heard here? Like weirdest food you've eaten and funny Wi-Fi names and stuff, network names. And just, you know, little thought starters. That we had a really fun conversation with that. So if you want to just hear like they're like 30-minute episodes, we're just kind of having fun, definitely go check that out, because I'd like for more people to hear that. Selfishly, I like more people to go check out what I'm working on. But
absolutely.
It's been a blast.
That's awesome. Yeah. The link is in our show notes. So you can find that if you want to check it out. Go check out our show notes and you'll get the links to that podcast.
Yeah. And then as always, I make sure to just kind of throw that in there and tell you that if you're checking all this stuff out, listening is obviously what we really enjoy the most. But if you can give us a little extra love, it's always that following, subscribing, and especially on like Apple podcasts is those ratings, reviews, things like that, those 5-star reviews that really help other people find us and get us to where we want to go. So we always appreciate that for sure.
Thanks in advance.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Until next time, I'm Rima.
And I'm Paik.
And Arlene Lang is strange indeed.